What's that one thing that happened in your family you were told to never talk about? I was 12 years old when I walked in on my dad cornering my younger brother Jeffrey. His shirt was off and he was undoing his belt buckle. Just 30 minutes ago, he'd put me to bed early, saying Jeffrey needed help with a school project and I couldn't distract him. I remember quietly tiptoeing back out of the room before grabbing my cell phone to call my mom. She'd been divorced with dad for 2 years by this point. Dad had forced me and Jeffrey to lie in court about her laying hands on us, and the second he got custody, he forbade us with any contact from her. This wasn't my first time speaking with her though. We'd maintained regular contact, mainly because me and Jeffrey were so scared of dad and she seemed like the only safety net we had. The problem was, mom was no saint either. Yeah, she loved us, but immediately after losing in court, she left for some rich dude in Brazil and never texted us first. This was different though. I remember pleading for her to pick up, and thankfully she did. I wasted no time telling her what was happening on the other side of that wall, even making sure I left enough quiet time so the phone could pick up dad's grunting and Jeffrey's muffled sobs. I remember mom going quiet, and then she started crying. Real, genuine, angry tears. Not again, were the only words she managed to get out. What do you mean, not again, mom? I quietly asked. Your dad, sweetie, I'll explain later. With that, she hung up the line, and at that exact moment is when my bedroom door creaked open. It was dad, walking a now limping and broken sobbing Jeffrey into bed. I remember my heart in my chest, planting my head down into the pillow so fast, hoping he hadn't noticed or heard me talking to mom. Thankfully, he hadn't. He put Jeffrey to bed before giving him what sounded like a soft kiss on the cheek and telling him he did good today. After he left the room, I waited a little, just until Jeffrey stopped full on crying before placing my hand on his shoulder. I told him I saw. Please don't tell anyone, he shot back. My brain malfunctioned. What do you mean don't tell anyone? Dad said if someone found out, I'd be in big trouble. They'd put me in jail. My heart shattered immediately. I reassured him that he wouldn't be in trouble. I told him that what dad was doing was wrong, that we needed to tell someone. He looked at me like I had just broken his world. So, it's not my fault when he takes me into the bathroom? My heart shattered even more. I told him no, and right then is when my mom texted me back. She had sent me a screenshot of her booked flight tickets. She was coming back. The very next day, I tried my best to act like nothing was wrong. I greeted dad in the morning, watched him make my cereal, then pretended like I wasn't disgusted when he told me to go to school alone so he could finish helping Jeffrey with the project. I remember being in school when mom called me. I've just landed. I remember feeling genuine hope. I asked her to please come over around 6. That's roughly when dad would be heading out for the bar. She told me no problem. She said she'd be there on the dot. I ended up at home an hour early after skipping my final class. And when I walked in, I found dad lounging around shirtless, claiming it was just too hot. It was 67 degrees. I remember asking where Jeffrey was. I had something cool to show him, and his face just flashed. He told me to just go upstairs, and he'd get Jeffrey shortly. Sure enough, he did. And when I saw Jeffrey and dad left, I explained everything to him. How mom was coming. How we were going to help him. How there was nothing that would stop us from getting justice. I saw him involuntarily flinch when I mentioned mom. He looked like he went to say something, but I cut him off and told him it was okay. She would help us. He kinda just went quiet. I figured it was just fear. At 6, as expected, dad started getting ready for the bar. Me and Jeffrey were sitting in our room sweating, waiting for the doorbell to ring. Mom was about to come in and save us, only she never did. 6:05, then 6:10. For some reason, dad hadn't left yet, and mom was nowhere to be found. I started calling her at 12 minutes past, but she wouldn't answer. That's when at 6:15, our bedroom door burst open. It was dad. Hey kids, come down to the living room, he said in the stone cold tone that made me wonder if he knew. He sat us both down on the couch before going to get himself a beer out of the fridge. I've decided not to go to the bar tonight, he said, sitting right beside Jeffrey, his hand lingering way too close to his back. There's something interesting I've recently heard. I started audibly sweating, begging mom would just show up and save us. But instead of that, I felt dad's voice getting closer to my face. There's something you've been doing, little missy, and I don't like it. His hands now went onto my thigh and started spidering up and up. I tried to turn my face away from his, but he grabbed it and forced me to look him in the eyes. You've been talking to mommy, haven't you? My heart sank. He was onto me. I started wondering if he did something to her, but before I even could, he said something that broke my entire world. If you really think she's going to help you, there's something you should know about your mom. That's when he pulled up an audio recording of them from years ago, discussing the terms of their divorce. He would get to keep the kids and do to us whatever he wanted, and in return, her partner in Brazil would send him $100,000. She's not coming. The recording kept playing on repeat. Dad's thumb hovered over the pause button but never pressed it. My mother's voice filled the room, negotiating away our lives like we were property. The $100,000 echoed in my ears. Jeffrey's breathing got faster beside me, turning into wheezes. Dad finally slammed the laptop shut. His hand squeezed my thigh harder before releasing. He stood up and stretched, acting like he'd just shown us vacation photos instead of proof that our mother sold us. He walked to the kitchen and opened the fridge again. The beer bottles clinked as he moved them around. Jeffrey stayed frozen on the couch, his whole body trembling.
Spot unsafe sites.
For his hand, but he pulled away. Dad came back with ingredients in his arms. Pasta, sauce, vegetables. He dumped them on the counter and turned to us. His face had that fake pleasant expression that made my skin crawl. We both stood without being told. In the kitchen, Dad positioned himself behind me at the stove. He handed me the wooden spoon and pressed against my back. His breathing matched the rhythm I'd heard through Jeffrey's door earlier. Slow, deliberate, controlled. The pasta water started boiling. Steam rose between us. Dad's hand covered mine on the spoon, guiding the stirring motion. His other hand rested on my hip. Jeffrey stood at the counter cutting vegetables, his movements mechanical. The spoon slipped from my grip and clattered on the floor. I jerked away and the words exploded out before I could stop them. Dad stepped back calmly. He picked up the spoon and washed it in the sink. He turned to Jeffrey with that concerned parent face he'd perfected. Jeffrey nodded slowly, not meeting my eyes. The words stung worse than any slap. The doorbell rang. Dad's whole body tensed. He wiped his hands on a dish towel and walked to the door. Through the kitchen doorway, I saw Mrs. Chen from next door. Her daughter Catherine stood beside her in pajamas, clutching a stuffed rabbit. Mrs. Chen's hands twisted together as she explained. Emergency at her sister's house. No time to find regular babysitter. Would I please watch Catherine for just 2 hours? She'd pay double the usual rate. Dad's face transformed into helpful neighbor mode. Of course I could help. What were neighbors for? He called me to the door, his hand finding my shoulder and squeezing just enough to hurt. I looked at Jeffrey still in the kitchen, then at Catherine's scared face, then at Mrs. Chen's desperate eyes. The choice wasn't really a choice. Mrs. Chen hugged me tight before leaving. Dad's smile never wavered as he watched us go. At the door, his hand brushed his belt buckle, the same spot he'd been touching when I found him with Jeffrey. Catherine's house smelled like lavender and home cooking. She showed me her new coloring books while I set up her dinner. My hands shook as I made her mac and cheese. 2 hours. Jeffrey alone with dad for 2 hours. Catherine asked why I looked sad. I forced a smile and told her I was just tired. We colored pictures of butterflies and rainbows while my mind stayed in that house next door. Mrs. Chen had left her laptop open on the kitchen counter. A Facebook page showed on the screen, some neighborhood group. Dad's profile picture smiled from a recent post about the challenges of single fatherhood. Dozens of heart reactions and supportive comments filled the thread. I mentioned mom while Catherine colored, just casual, like wondering if she might visit soon. Catherine looked up with those big eyes kids have. Mrs. Chen had posted posted in the group too, praising dad for his dedication. Always home with the kids, never going out anymore. Such a devoted father. The timestamp showed just this morning. My phone buzzed 3 times in quick succession. The first text came from Mrs. Chen. Traffic accident blocking the highway. Would need another hour at least. So sorry. Would pay triple. The second came from Jeffrey. Just 2 words that made my chest tight. The third showed an unknown number. No area code I recognized. The message made me drop the phone. Catherine asked if I was okay. I picked up the phone with trembling fingers and read it again. Someone knew. Someone was watching. But who? I texted Mrs. Chen back that it was fine. Take her time. Then I grabbed Catherine's hand. We were going for a walk. Right now. She protested about her coloring, but I promised ice cream. The sidewalk stretched between the two houses. Each step felt like crossing an ocean. Catherine skipped beside me, chattering about her favorite flavors. My eyes stayed fixed on our front door. Mrs. Chen's car pulled up just as we reached the porch. She jumped out, apologizing and pressing money into my hand. Her face changed when she saw mine. That concerned neighbor look everyone got around me lately. She asked if everything was all right, if I needed to talk. Her hand touched my forehead like checking for fever. Behind her, Catherine tugged on her mom's sleeve, whining about the promised ice cream that never came. The front door opened. Dad stood there in fresh clothes, his face red and panicked. Real panic, not the fake kind. His hands shook as he gestured wildly. Mrs. Chen immediately switched to comfort mode. She put her arm around Dad's shoulders and guided him inside. I followed, Catherine still attached to her mother's hand. Dad's phone sat on the coffee table, the unknown number displayed on the screen. He kept pointing at it, his words tumbling over each other about threats and destroying our family. Tears actually formed in his eyes. Mrs. Chen made soothing noises. She'd seen this before, she said. After divorces, sometimes unstable ex-spouses made threats. Had he considered a restraining order? Jeffrey appeared in the hallway. His hair was damp like he'd just showered. He walked carefully to Dad's side and put his small hand on Dad's arm. Dad's fingers immediately covered Jeffrey's, possessive and protective at once. Jeffrey's voice came out steady and clear. He looked right at Mrs. Chen as he spoke. Dad had been teaching him important things, private things between fathers and sons. Nothing wrong with that, right? Mrs. Chen smiled and ruffled Jeffrey's hair. Of course not. Fathers needed to guide their sons. Such a mature young man. Dad must be so proud. My eyes caught movement near the coat rack. Dad's jacket hung there, the same one he'd worn earlier. Something glinted in the pocket, metal catching the light. Mom's car keys, the purple butterfly keychain I'd bought her for Mother's Day 3 years ago, right there in Dad's pocket. My body moved before my brain caught up. I lunged across the room, reaching for the jacket. Dad's tears stopped instantly. Mrs. Chen's arms wrapped around me from behind, surprisingly strong. Catherine started crying. Mrs. Chen held me tighter, speaking in that calm voice people use with dangerous animals. I needed to calm down. I was scaring the children. This wasn't appropriate behavior. She looked at Dad over my shoulder. Maybe she should call someone? Get me some help? She knew people at child services who specialized in troubled children. Dad's face cycled through emotions, concern, gratitude, calculation. He touched Mrs. Chen's shoulder gently, shaking his head. I was going through a hard time, adjusting to the divorce. He could handle it. Mrs. Chen slowly released me. She gathered Catherine and headed for the door, promising to check in tomorrow. At the threshold, she turned back. If he needed anything, anything at all, just ask. The neighborhood looked after its own. The door closed. Dad's mask dropped instantly. He walked to the coat rack and pulled out Mom's keys, dangling them in front of me. Then he slipped them into his pants pocket and patted it. Jeffrey hadn't moved from his spot. His eyes stayed fixed on the floor. Dad walked over and put both hands on Jeffrey's shoulders, steering him toward the kitchen. Dinner needed finishing. We were a family. Families ate together. The pasta had gone cold. Dad dumped it and started over, humming while he worked. Jeffrey set the table with mechanical precision. I stood frozen by the coat rack, my mind spinning. Mom had come. She'd made it to the house, but she never made it inside. The keys in Dad's pocket proved it. What had he done? Where was she now? Dad called us to eat. His voice had that edge that meant no arguments. We sat in our usual spots. He served the pasta, making sure to give Jeffrey an extra large portion. Growing boys needed their strength, he said. The food tasted like cardboard in my mouth. Dad talked about normal things. School, homework, weekend plans. Like this was any other dinner. Like Mom's keys weren't burning a hole in his pocket. After dinner, Dad made us do homework at the kitchen table while he washed dishes. His eyes never left us. The unknown number hadn't texted again. Jeffrey's pencil scratched across paper, solving math problems with perfect concentration. Bedtime came too soon. Dad walked us upstairs, his hand on Jeffrey's shoulder the whole way. In our room, he tucked Jeffrey in first, spending extra time smoothing the blankets. His goodnight kiss on Jeffrey's forehead lasted too long. He turned to me next. His face was calm, almost peaceful. He sat on the edge of my bed and brushed hair from my face. His words came out soft, almost gentle. The threat hung in the air after he left. I lay in the dark listening to Jeffrey's breathing, not quite asleep, not quite awake, somewhere in between, where the bad things lived. My phone glowed under the pillow. The unknown number had texted again while we ate dinner, just coordinates this time, numbers that meant nothing to me. Yet, morning came like a slap. Dad's cheerful voice carried up the stairs, calling us for breakfast. Time to start another day. Time to pretend everything was normal. Time to keep the secret that was eating us alive from the inside out. But now I knew Mom had tried to come. She'd kept her promise, and Dad had stopped her. The keys in his pocket proved it. The unknown number knew something, and somewhere out there, Mom was either waiting for us, or I couldn't finish the thought. Jeffrey stirred in his bed. Another day in hell was about to begin. But now I had 2 clues. Mom's keys and a mysterious number. It wasn't much, but it was more than we'd had yesterday. Dad called again, impatient now. We dressed quickly and headed downstairs. The smell of pancakes filled the kitchen. Dad stood at the stove, Mom's keys visible in his pocket as he flipped the batter. He smiled when he saw us. That perfect father smile that fooled everyone. Everyone except whoever was behind that unknown number. They knew what he was doing. And maybe, just maybe, they could help us escape this nightmare. But first, we had to survive another day. Dad served the pancakes with practiced normalcy, placing extra syrup on Jeffrey's plate. His movements were smooth, controlled, like an actor who'd rehearsed his role 1,000 times. I watched him pocket Mom's keys deeper as he bent to get orange juice from the fridge. School offered no escape. The counselor pulled me aside during second period, clipboard in hand. Jeffrey needed his anxiety medication refilled. Dad's signature was required. Standard procedure. She handed me the form with a sympathetic smile, mentioning how difficult divorce could be on children. I folded the paper carefully, knowing what this meant. Dad would control when Jeffrey got his medication. Another tool in his arsenal. Another way to maintain power over us. During lunch, my phone vibrated. The unknown number had sent a photo. Our house, taken from across the street. A timestamp from last night when Mom should have arrived. Someone had been watching. Someone had seen everything. After school, I found Aunt Sarah waiting by the pickup zone. Dad had asked her to collect us. Family emergency, she explained, though her eyes avoided mine. The drive to her house was silent, except for Jeffrey's nervous breathing in the backseat. Aunt Sarah's living room smelled like vanilla candles and disappointment. She sat us down, hands folded in her lap. Her words came out rehearsed. She was worried about me. My behavior reminded her of when Grandpa died, how I'd seen threats everywhere, imagined danger in shadows. Dad had called her, concerned. Such a devoted father, trying his best. Maybe I needed someone to talk to, a professional. She had names, numbers, people who specialized in children struggling with divorce. Jeffrey sat beside me, picking at a loose thread on his jeans. His silence spoke volumes. I wanted to scream the truth, but Aunt Sarah's face had already decided. I was the problem child. Dad was the victim. The ride home felt like a funeral procession. Dad waited on the porch, arms crossed, playing the part of worried parent perfectly. He thanked Aunt Sarah profusely, one hand resting on Jeffrey's shoulder the entire time. time. Inside, he didn't mention the conversation. Instead, he opened his laptop at the kitchen table. His fingers flew across the keyboard, creating something new. A Facebook group appeared on screen. Single fathers supporting each other. He made himself admin, wrote the first post about the challenges of raising children alone. Within minutes, neighbors started joining. Comments poured in, hearts and thumbs up for the dedicated dad doing his best. Mrs. Chen was first to share the group, adding her own praise for his devotion. I watched him build his fortress of public opinion, brick by digital brick. Every post I might make, every cry for help, would now be seen through this lens. The troubled daughter of the perfect single father. That night, dinner was Chinese takeout. Dad let us eat in front of the TV, a rare treat. He sat between us on the couch, one arm around Jeffrey, the other holding the remote. A perfect family tableau for anyone looking through the window. My phone buzzed. The unknown number again. This time, a video file. My hands shook as I opened it in the bathroom, volume barely audible. Grainy footage of our driveway. Mom's car pulling up. Dad meeting her outside. A brief struggle. Then her car driving away with Dad at the wheel. The timestamp showed 6:03 p.m. while Jeffrey and I had waited in our room, while I'd called her phone desperately. She'd been here. She'd tried. I deleted the video immediately, knowing Dad checked our phones. But the image burned in my mind. Evidence existed. Someone had proof. Someone cared enough to share it. Morning brought new challenges. At school, I tried to check on Jeffrey during recess. The playground monitor intercepted me, walkie-talkie in hand. Dad had called ahead. I was bothering my brother, disrupting his school day. The incident was noted in my file. Jeffrey stood 20 feet away, surrounded by friends, not meeting my eyes. The distance between us grew wider than the playground. I was becoming the unstable sister he needed protection from. In computer class, I discovered something else. Mom's old email was still logged into the family tablet. Dad had gained access. Every appointment reminder, every communication with teachers or doctors, now flowed through him. He could see everything, control everything. The auto pay was still active on her credit cards. Subscriptions, memberships, automatic payments, all continuing as if she hadn't vanished. A digital ghost maintaining the illusion of normalcy. PE class became my downfall. Three nights without real sleep caught up. I stumbled during relay races, nearly fainted during jumping jacks. The nurse's notes were thorough. Exhaustion, possible substance use, recommend parental conference. Dad arrived within the hour, all concern and responsibility. He spoke quietly with the nurse, mentioned the difficult divorce, his ex-wife's issues, how hard he tried to shield us from her instability, how sometimes trauma manifested in the children. The nurse nodded sympathetically. Of course, these situations were so difficult. She made sure to monitor me closely, document any concerning behaviors. Dad squeezed my shoulder just hard enough to hurt, thanking her for her diligence. Uncle Marcus called that evening. Dad put him on speaker, letting his voice fill the kitchen. Marcus was struggling. His wife had given him an ultimatum. Stop enabling family drama, or she'd leave. Take the kids. Start fresh somewhere else. Marcus's voice cracked. He believed something was wrong. He wanted to help, but he couldn't lose his marriage. Couldn't risk his own children. He was sorry. So sorry. The line went dead. Dad's smile was small, satisfied. Another ally gone. Another door closed. The fortress grew stronger. The Facebook group exploded overnight. Hundreds of members. Local news shared it as a feel-good story. Single dad creates support network. Comments poured in about my concerning behavior. The disturbed Thompson girl who attacked her poor father. Someone had photographed me at school, stumbling in PE. The image spread through parent WhatsApp groups with worried messages. Was she on substances? Was she dangerous? Should they keep their children away? Emma found me crying in the bathroom. Her mom needed dad's landscaping contract. Their business was struggling. One bad review, one lost client, and they'd lose everything. Emma was sorry. She believed me, but she couldn't risk her family's survival. I understood. Another door closing. Another friend gone. The fortress grew impenetrable. Dad started dating Emma's mom 2 weeks later. He brought flowers, quoted Jeffrey's favorite movie during dinner, charmed her daughter with magic tricks and promises of stability, a ready-made family to replace the broken one. The police visit was inevitable. Dad filed a report about my threats. I filed a counter-report about his abuse. We both took polygraphs. Both passed. He believed his version where I was unstable. I believed mine where he was a monster. Truth became subjective. My old diary surfaced during the investigation. Pages and pages praising Dad as the best father, written during the custody battle when he'd coached us to lie. Now, evidence of his exemplary parenting. My own words used as weapons against me. The 4-year-old next door started repeating things. Jeffrey's daddy was teaching him to be a man, not weak like his sister. The words came out innocent, absorbed from adult conversations. Another brick in Dad's fortress. Ring doorbell footage became evidence. Me trying to get into the house at midnight after sneaking out to think. Me looking aggressive, desperate, unstable. The concerned neighbors sharing clips in the Facebook group, protecting the community from the disturbed girl. Family court treated my allegations as manipulation. A desperate attempt to get sent to mom in Brazil. The judge's notes were clear. No evidence of abuse. Clear evidence of behavioral problems. Recommend maintaining current custody arrangement. I discovered mom's Netflix account still active. The viewing history showed Dad's recent watches. Father-daughter bonding videos, parenting difficult children, managing behavioral issues, building evidence of his dedication. The autocomplete revealed mom's last searches. Emergency custody lawyers, domestic violence resources, how to document abuse. She'd been building a case. She'd been fighting back. Then she vanished. Dad's new girlfriend posted constantly. Blending families, fresh starts, photos of her wearing mom's abandoned jewelry, standing in mom's kitchen, sleeping in mom's bed, erasing her existence post by post. The school therapist had no choice. My statements about wanting Dad gone forever were concerning. Mandatory reporting required action. Another file. Another mark against me. Another brick in the fortress. I tried recording Dad secretly. The phone's notification gave me away. He smiled, knowing I was desperate enough to try. Paranoid enough to need proof. Unstable enough to violate privacy. The recording showed only his calm demeanor. My aggressive accusations. Jeffrey's therapy appointments became torture. Dad scheduled them specifically so I had to wait with him. An hour alone together each week. Him reading newspapers. Me counting ceiling tiles. Both pretending the other didn't exist. Mrs. Chen received an anonymous complaint about her daycare license. Violations that could shut her down. She had 3 kids to feed. A mortgage to pay. She couldn't testify about the keys. Couldn't risk her family's survival. Another witness gone. I found Dad in mom's old bedroom one morning. Wearing her abandoned robe. The fabric still held her perfume faintly. He didn't acknowledge me watching. Just continued making the bed. Humming her favorite song. The offer came during one of our forced waiting sessions. He'd forget the recent accusations. Drop the behavioral complaints. Let me finish school in peace. All I had to do was stop. Stop asking about mom. Stop making waves. Stop fighting. I refused. His response was measured. I didn't care about Jeffrey. Didn't care about keeping our family together. Selfish. Just like mom. The words hit exactly where he aimed them. Then everything shifted. I found mom's old phone hidden in my jewelry box. The recording wasn't from Dad's phone. She'd recorded it herself. The background noise was different. The angle wrong. She'd been documenting. Building evidence. The cloud account password was Jeffrey's birthday. Inside, years of documentation. Concerns about Dad's behavior. Photos of bruises. Recordings of threats. She'd been fighting longer than we knew. Trying to save us without revealing her hand. Her help for Dad wasn't what he claimed. Payment records showed therapy bills. Treatment for inappropriate urges. She'd tried to fix him. Tried to save the marriage. Tried to protect us while staying close. Grandma arrived unexpected one afternoon. Dad's mother, torn between loyalty and truth. She'd seen things, suspected worse. But these were her only grandchildren, her only remaining family. The choice was impossible. She chose supervised visits, limited access, neutral ground. It meant I couldn't search mom's old room, couldn't access potential evidence, but it also meant dad couldn't be alone with Jeffrey at her house. Small victories in a losing war. I befriended dad's girlfriend's daughter. Sleepovers became reconnaissance missions, access to their house, to dad's computer, to the life he was building on mom's erasure. Each visit, gathering intelligence. The grocery store encounter was planned. I knew the girlfriend shopped Tuesday mornings, mentioned mom's surprise visit plans casually by the cereal, watched her face change, saw the doubt creep in, planted seeds of suspicion. The cloud files revealed more history. Jeffrey as a toddler. Behavioral changes dad explained away. Mom's growing concern, her attempts to get help, the system failing her at every turn. Years of fighting shadows. Mom's divorce lawyer emerged from nowhere. The $100,000 was stolen marital assets. He wanted it back, would sue for it. Court dates and legal fees drained my college fund while dad used mom's credit cards freely. Jeffrey's emergency therapy session happened during my SATs. I couldn't be there, couldn't support him. The absence was noted. Negligent guardian. Another mark in my file. Another brick in dad's fortress. The coffee shop confrontation was public. Messy. The teenage barista called security while customers filmed. Another video for the Facebook group. More evidence of my instability. More sympathy for the struggling single father. My after-school job ended quickly. Too much drama, too much risk. Bad for business. The owner apologized while handing me final wages. Dad's girlfriend's daughter started the next week. Another door closed. Grandma's basement became my refuge. Sleeping bag on concrete. Boxes of Christmas decorations for company. While upstairs, dad renovated mom's craft room. Created Jeffrey's special space. Erased another piece of her. Grandma begged me one night. Let mom rest in peace. Stop destroying the family. Stop hurting everyone. Her tears were real. The pain genuine. I was tearing apart what remained. But I couldn't stop. Not when Jeffrey still lived there. Emma's mom got suspended from work. Relationship with a client under investigation. Their finances crumbled. Emma stopped talking to me at school. Her eyes accused me of destroying her family too. Collateral damage in my war. I kept going. What choice did I have? Every family I touched fell apart. Every person who helped got hurt. But Jeffrey was still trapped. Still in danger. Still needed saving. Jeffrey asked the question during one of our rare moments alone. What if dad was telling the truth? What if mom had abandoned us? His doubt was genuine. The manipulation so complete he couldn't see the chains. I admitted the truth publicly. Yes, I'd lied during custody hearings. Yes, I'd said mom hit us when she hadn't. The admission was meant to build credibility. Instead, it destroyed what little remained. Proof I was a liar. Always had been. Evidence of my failures surfaced. Jeffrey's earlier behavioral changes I'd missed. Bedwetting I'd ignored. Signs I'd overlooked while living my own life. Why hadn't I seen? Why hadn't I protected him sooner? The emergency custody hearing got moved up. 72 hours notice. My lawyer was out of town. Dad's team ready and waiting. The system working against us again. Time running out. Dad's testimony was compelling. He genuinely believed he was preparing Jeffrey for a harsh world. His own father's abuse had shaped him, made him strong. He was passing on survival skills. Love mixed with trauma and a toxic generational cocktail. I had to reveal mom's mental health struggles, her anxiety, her depression, the therapy bills, private medical information splashed across court documents, breaking promises to keep her secrets, becoming someone I didn't recognize. The strategic manipulator emerged, matching dad's tactics, playing his games. The honest 12-year-old was gone, replaced by someone harder, someone willing to befriend a receptionist to access therapy notes, someone dad had created. Small victories felt hollow. Supervised visits granted, protection orders filed, but dad still walked free, still maintained innocence, still had supporters. The fortress cracked but didn't crumble. We both cried at mom's missing person poster. Different reasons, different grief, but real tears. The photo was from her birthday last year, smiling, unaware of what was coming. Hope frozen in time. Dad's counterclaim gained traction. I was obsessed with Jeffrey, unhealthily attached, projecting my own issues. The evaluator took notes, considered possibilities. Truth became malleable. Everything hinged on finding mom. Without her testimony, evidence meant nothing. Without her body, hope remained. Without answers, we stayed trapped in limbo, waiting for resolution that might never come. The Brazilian lover's voice came through mom's emergency contact list. I'd memorized the number from her cloud account, dialing from a burner phone at the library. His accent was thick, careful. He confirmed what I'd suspected. Mom had contacted him that night, frantic about getting us out. She'd promised to meet him at the airport, never showed. He revealed more. Mom had been documenting dad's behavior for months, sending copies to Brazil for safekeeping. The night she disappeared, she'd texted him that she was leaving dad's house with evidence. That was the last message. I pressed for details. He admitted mom had stayed together proof, believing the legal system would work if she had enough documentation. And she'd needed evidence of a pattern, not just isolated incidents. The $100,000 had been their joint savings, which dad had somehow accessed during the divorce. Back at grandma's, I searched the garage while she napped. Mom's old boxes were stacked in the rafters, covered in dust. Inside the third box, wrapped in Christmas lights, I found it. Mom's backup phone, the battery dead, but the memory intact. The phone powered on after charging. Videos filled the gallery. Mom documenting dad's threats, his controlling behavior, his escalating violence. Date stamps showed she'd been recording for over a year, building her case methodically. One video made me drop the phone. Mom confronting dad about Jeffrey, threatening to expose him. Dad's response was calm, measured. He reminded her about her depression, her anxiety medication. Who would believe an unstable woman over a devoted father? The final video was dated the night she vanished. Mom in her car, outside our house, preparing to confront dad one last time. She looked directly at the camera, explaining she was going inside to get us. The video cut off mid-sentence. I copied everything to multiple drives, hiding them in different locations. One in the library's lost and found, another in Emma's old treehouse, a third mailed to mom's lawyer. Insurance against dad's next move. The custody hearing arrived faster than expected. The courtroom was packed with neighbors, teachers, and family. Dad's supporters filled one side. My side had empty seats. Grandma sat behind me, hands trembling.
Hey guys, real quick, if you're enjoying this thrilling story, please hit follow for more.
Dad's appearance had changed. His perfect facade showed cracks. Stubble on his usually clean-shaven face. His tie slightly crooked. Small signs of pressure building. I presented the evidence methodically. No emotion, just facts. The phone videos played on the courtroom screen. Mom's voice filled the space, documenting years of abuse. Dad's threats captured clearly. His lawyer challenged the authenticity. Demanded proof the videos weren't edited. The judge ordered a digital forensics expert to examine the phone. Court recessed for 3 days. During the break, dad's girlfriend confronted me outside the courthouse. Her daughter had found mom's jewelry in dad's drawer, along with documents mom had hidden. The girlfriend's face showed dawning realization. She'd been wearing a dead woman's rings. The bank records surfaced next. Dad's large cash withdrawal the day mom disappeared. The teller remembered because dad had seemed agitated, insisting on specific bills. The timestamp matched mom's final video. Jeffrey's therapist testified reluctantly. Professional obligation overruled confidentiality when child safety was at stake. Jeffrey had disclosed things during sessions, details that corroborated the timeline. The therapist's notes were entered into evidence. Dad's breakdown came suddenly, not dramatic or loud, just a quiet crumbling as evidence mounted. He started talking about his own father, the cycle of abuse, how he was trying to make Jeffrey strong. The judge ordered a psychiatric evaluation. The forensics expert confirmed the videos were authentic, metadata intact, no signs of tampering. Mom's documentation was thorough, professional. She'd known exactly what courts needed. Child protective services moved quickly. Emergency removal order. Jeffrey would stay with grandma temporarily. I could visit, but not have have custody. My own behavioral file was too thick. The system's compromised. Dad's arrest happened quietly. No dramatic scene. Just officers at grandma's door with a warrant. Charges related to mom's disappearance, based on the new evidence. He went without resistance. That calm mask finally slipping. The prosecutor met with me privately. They needed my testimony about mom's keys, the timeline, everything I'd witnessed, but they were honest. Without mom's body, conviction would be difficult. Circumstantial evidence only went so far. I made a choice. Testifying meant reliving everything publicly. It meant Jeffrey hearing details I'd tried to shield him from. But silence meant dad might walk free. The decision was obvious. Jeffrey started therapy properly. Real help this time, not dad's controlled sessions. His progress was slow. Years of manipulation didn't unravel quickly, but he was safe. That mattered most. The trial date was set, 6 months away. Dad remained in custody, bail denied due to flight risk. His Facebook support group dissolved as evidence became public. The fortress crumbled brick by brick.